Welcome to the November 8th, 2017 episode of Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM in Chico and streaming online at kzfr.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Non-Human Radio. I'm Jeannie Trezino, and I want to thank everyone who called in to support Non-Human Radio during the pledge drive. And to all the volunteers who helped answer the phones and to all the businesses that donated swag and gift certificates and other goodies for folks who pledged. The station has met its goal, and we have you to thank for it.
And I'm Danny Toms. Thanks again to all the donors and folks that helped out. Today, Jeannie and I are going to talk about selective empathy and the current conflict in the North State between wolves and ranchers. Jeannie?
Thanks, Danny. Which would upset you more? Reading a news story about a badly beaten adult or one about a badly beaten puppy? If you're like the majority of 256 undergrads at Boston's Northeastern University who had this choice in a study, you'd have stronger feelings about the puppy. Each of the students who read a fake news article about an assailant who attacked the victim with a baseball bat, breaking one of their legs and knocking them unconscious. The victim in each story alternated between a puppy, a six-year-old dog, a one-year-old child, and a 30-year-old adult. The students were then asked questions that assessed how much empathy they felt toward the victim they'd read about. Sociology professors Jack Levin and Arnold Arluch thought the age of the victims would have the most impact on the students' empathy, but that didn't turn out to be the case. Empathy levels for the puppy, adult dog, and young child were actually all about the same, while the level for the 30-year-old human was lower. And why is that? For one thing, the students did not view the dogs as animals, but rather as fur babies or family members alongside human children. The other reason why the dogs and the baby may have elicited more empathy than for the 30-year-old human is because dogs and babies are more helpless than adult humans. While adults could possibly remove themselves from abusive situations, a dog or young child would be less able to do so. The researchers then concluded that it appears that adult humans are viewed as capable of protecting themselves, while full-grown dogs are just seen as larger puppies. Levin and Arluch conducted the experiment back in 2013, but it's been getting a lot of media attention lately after the study was recently published in the journal Society and Animals. For several years, the professors have been studying the relationship between animal cruelty and human violence, and they've decided to develop an experiment that tested whether people were actually more sympathetic to animal victims than to humans.
You know, it's typically demonstrated that murderers, for lack of a better word, you know, often start by abusing animals. And so you can kind of extrapolate that from this study, whereas if you don't even have empathy for animals,
correct,
where are you going to go next? And it also kind of, some of that reasoning, I think, ties back to Bill's show and to homelessness, where the general lack of empathy because folks are perceiving them as, adults or people that could have made a better choice when, you know, nobody chooses to be homeless.
That's a really good point, Danny. It's really good. Let's see here. In a similar empathy testing experiment in the UK just 2 years ago, Harrison's Fund, which is a medical research charity, printed two advertisements. Each asked the viewer, would you give £5 to save Harrison from a slow, painful death? But in one ad, Harrison was a dog. In the other, he was a boy, actually Harrison Smith, who has a condition called Duchenne muscular dystrophy. And guess which advertisement got a significantly bigger response? Of course, it was Harrison the dog. Alex Smith, who was Harrison the human's father and the CEO of the Harrison Fund, was inspired to use a photo of a dog after the Manchester Dogs Home in the UK received over $1.5 million in donations within a week after the shelter burned in a fire. Alex Smith wondered why anyone would suddenly donate to a dog shelter when children are dying.
Well, that's a terribly speciesist thought, to have levels of worth of beings, right? Children before dogs, dogs before cats, cats before mice or whatever. I think all animals and all people want to live and not suffer.
Absolutely. Anyway, what got me thinking about this idea and looking into a couple of these articles is that I was interested in looking at what triggers our empathy and what its limits are, and what the limits of empathy are, right? About 60 years ago last week, this anniversary occurred, and that's what got me thinking about this. 60 years ago last week, Russian scientists launched the first living being into outer space to orbit planet Earth. This being was a three-year-old dog named Laika, who was crammed into a small satellite that was called Sputnik 2. After a few hours in space, Laika suffered a miserable death, unexpectedly succumbing to intense heat. But even worse, the overall experiment, the scientists never intended for Laika to survive that journey and to return home. At the time, the technology did not exist to bring someone back in from orbit. And Sputnik 2, which ended up being her coffin, eventually burned up in the Earth's atmosphere when it re-entered in 1958. So I find this a very moving event in our history, and I don't think it takes too much effort for you, the listener, to live with and feel the pain of your own empathy for Laika. I think it's impossible not to feel empathy for Laika. And if you're listening, you might be feeling it right now, right? You can imagine her up in space, all alone, scared, getting hot, feeling confined. And so now I'd like you to get into that same space of empathy when thinking about cows, pigs, chickens, and turkeys and the lonely, painful lives that they lead, all because we humans decide that these beings are some ones we would like to kill to eat. Or you can also imagine the anguish of a dairy cow when her calf is taken from her and she's returned back to milk duty for us humans. So, and even if these animals never suffer a day in their lives, at some point their trust and their lives are ended. So I invite you to take the feelings that you just felt about Laika when I described her lonely death in space and move those feelings forward to your conscious mind, and from there go to the actions that align with those feelings. That is, I invite you to live with and grow from that physical feeling of empathy for Laika and extend that to other animals and move that physical feeling to emotion and then hopefully to some conscious action, right? Examine your actions and do they align with that empathy that you're feeling physically in your body.
I think those are wise words from Jeannie. One thing to kind of keep in mind, the way, you know, humans' empathy works is that we're very good with the personal and the specific and the singular. If there's a chicken running around in the road or a dog in the freeway, you're most likely to stop and try to save it or think about stopping and try to save it and to be kind of shook up by the whole incident later. If you read a news article about 400,000 chickens being suffocated by foam, you know, some suffocation process in a chicken farm, it's kind of like, well, you know, stuff happens. And you don't feel 400,000 times as much upset as you might have about the one chicken in the freeway.
Yeah, I don't think we're capable of feeling 400,000 times
right.
That kind of pain, right?
Right. But on the other hand, you can't let it numb you and not realize that though these numbers of in animal agriculture are overwhelming, it's all individuals at the end of the day. Going through that. So,
you're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio. The show is hosted by Jeannie Trezino, yours truly, and Danny Toms. What's up next, Danny?
The Sacramento Bee reported in late October that a wolf has killed a California rancher's cow for the first time in more than 100 years, raising tensions in the newly reclaimed wolf country in Lassen County. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife confirmed that a member of the so-called Lassen Pack killed a heifer on October 13th on private property in western Lassen County. Data from a GPS collar worn by the pack's breeding female showed she had been on the site for at least 6 hours the night the 600-pound yearling cow was killed. Wildlife officials said wolves were seen at the carcass the following morning. When state wildlife officers investigated the kill, the wolf hung close by on a forested slope a few hundred yards away. Ranchers have been anxious about wolves since the endangered animals returned to Northern California in 2011, and they criticized Fish and Wildlife for not announcing the confirmed kill. The incident didn't get widely publicized until the California Farm Bureau Federation and the California Cattlemen's Association issued a press release about the incident. just, you know, it's a couple of big press releases for one single cow being killed by a wolf. And you don't usually see these guys respond to other incidents that quickly. Fish and Wildlife spokesperson Jordan Traverso objected, saying the agency hid nothing. The kill had been announced both on the Fish and Wildlife website and on a blog where the department shares news about California's wolves. The Cattlemen's Association said area ranchers suspect the Lassen pack also attacked four other calves belonging to the same rancher in September. The state also investigated those incidents but ruled out wolves in three of them, but said the fourth was a possible wolf kill. In the fourth instance, confirmation was impossible because so much of the carcass had already been eaten. In an interview with the Lassen County Times, the rancher, Wally Roney, said he was sure the wolf pack killed all five of the livestock. The rancher said the area where the attacks occurred is a 1,000-acre piece of family property that has a meadow, a cabin, and a barn, and apparently no fences. In the winter, the rancher moves his cattle to his 7,000-acre winter ranch off Highway 99, just south of the Tehama County line.
Yeah, this is local. This is a property that we've probably all passed on our way heading north, either to Redding or to Red Bluff.
Right. Because of the wolf attack, the rancher moved about two-thirds of his cows to Tehama County and was preparing to move the rest. The family owns a number of parcels in western Lassen County, as well as having grazing leases on public lands in the area.
Yeah, and we've talked about grazing leases so many times on this show. But yeah, our national forests earn part of their keep, not only by timber, but by leasing themselves out for grazing.
And, you know, wolves don't really know what's a national forest versus what's a leased public land versus what's private property. They're just doing what wolves do. Fish and Wildlife's Jordan Traverso stated that the agency warned Roney about the threat from wolves and tried to help. In an emailed statement to the Plumas County News, Traverso said that the agency had gone to great lengths to communicate with the rancher and with others in the community about the presence of wolves. The agency made it clear to the rancher that the wolves were frequenting the site where his cows were and offered him non-lethal assistance and tools, which he declined to accept. Roney told the Plumas County News that the non-lethal tools consisted of flashing lights and sirens that he feared would have stampeded his cows and that were somehow not consistent with proper animal husbandry. Whatever that means.
Right, so, I mean, it's like they have there is an image of what's proper and what's most profitable.
Right.
And it yields nothing to wild animals, nothing whatsoever.
And, you know, there's not very many wolves.
Yeah, right.
You know, this is a world, this world is not reserved for very few rich ranchers to grow, raise cattle.
Or even struggling ranchers. I mean,
right.
It's likely he's, you know, rich in land, but who knows what his financial...
Who knows? Yeah.
It's not an issue of, like, how much money he has. It's just an issue that he feels entitled to continue doing business as usual.
Right.
Even though the environment around him is changing. Whether it's wolves coming in or climate change, you know, I mean...
Yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, if my job has an issue, we don't go appeal to the federal government for, you know, bailout or a better air conditioner or, you know.
Right.
It's stuff that has to be figured out, and you can tell from this that they were not even trying to work with Fish and Wildlife. And, you know, I think I read this on one of the local newspapers, and of course the comments were filled with people immediately saying, well, the Fed's got to pay for the cow, as if, you know, somehow... there's not enough welfareism in agriculture, and why would the federal government be required to compensate individuals for business losses, you know, and only these specific types of individuals? So the wolves are here, and I think this issue is going to continue to keep happening as they get reintroduced and repopulate.
And the story continues. An environmentalist who has advocated for the California wolf population dismissed the rancher's concerns. Amaruk Weiss, a wolf advocate at the Center for Biological Diversity, a nonprofit conservation group that has pushed to get more species listed as endangered and thus under the protection of the Endangered Species Act, along with other wolf advocates, say such wolf kills are rare, especially if ranchers have taken steps to keep the animals away. Weiss said that livestock owners have to take common sense precautions if they know wolves are in the area. And in this case, it sounds like Fish and Wildlife did notify the rancher that wolves were in the area. These wolves, the female wolf of this pack, was radio collared, so they could take a bearing on her probably daily. One of the precautions that ranchers can take is making sure that the livestock stay together, and also quickly disposing of the carcasses of cows that may die from other causes. Otherwise, those carcasses can act as lures for the wolves, right? So, you know, the rancher has to make sure he's not his own worst enemy. Wildlife officials announced the discovery of the Lassen pack back in July of this year, and it is the second known family of wolves found in Northern California in 90 years.
So, I mean, let's ponder that. The second, essentially, wolf pack in California in 90 years, like one of the largest apex predators in the state. There should be many, many wolves in a natural ecosystem here. And, you know, just on a basis of what's good for, you know, humanity, what's good for the world, you know, is not some kind of subdivided ecosystem where only certain things are allowed to live. And I think the other thing that popped to mind, sorry for interrupting here, Ginny, is that, you know, you take away the wolves, what happens? You end up with a lot more deer. Well, then what do the hunters say? Well, we have to hunt more deer to keep them healthy because they're overpopulating.
Exactly.
And so it's this whole kind of
it's
cycle.
It's an ecosystem managed for extraction
of
value, whether it's in the form of cow bodies or for recreation in terms of deer hunting and other hunting.
Right.
The Lassen pack has been considered particularly significant because the father of the Lassen pups is the son of the famous OR7, a lone male wolf who became a media favorite when he crossed from Oregon into Northern California 6 years ago and who spent several years in the North State. I know we reported on him in, on Non-Human Radio in the past years. He was roaming around looking for a mate. OR7 was the first wolf seen in California since they were eradicated by humans back in the 1920s. And we'll do a future show on just what that impulse was to eradicate the wolf, but definitely wolves have always been feared by cattle ranchers. Environmentalists say the wolves are simply returning to their natural habitat and range. Ranchers, of course, disagree and have gone to court to try to prove it. The California Farm Bureau Federation and the California Cattlemen's Association have sued the California Fish and Game Commission earlier this year, challenging the commission's decision to list the gray wolf under the California Endangered Species Act. The rancher's argument is that the Endangered Species Act not only only applies to native species, not visitors from other states.
They're not native anymore because the ranchers already tried to kill them all in the 1920s, as you just mentioned.
Right, so they're no longer native, according to the ranchers. Environmentalists, of course, fiercely disagree and have sought to have the case dismissed. State biologists say that the gray wolves are native to California, so that's a good grounds. We will be reporting on the outcome of that case for sure. Ranchers say that the special protections for wolves under the Endangered Species Act don't just make it illegal to kill a wolf under any circumstances, it also takes away their ability to take other kinds of non-lethal action. California Cattlemen's Association president, and who also happens to be the associate dean of Chico State College of Agriculture and the administrator for the University Farm, Dave Daly, said in an interview that you can't even chase wolves away on a four-wheeler because that's considered pursuit and is an illegal task under the California Endangered Species Act. According to Daly, the problem is there is no management for wolves. If there's no control, obviously they're going to populate. We're concerned about how far and how wide that will occur and how quickly, right? He's concerned about a single wolf because he's concerned about 20 or 30 years from now that all of a sudden there will be hundreds of wolves.
Right.
According to Daly, other states, currently, California has no mechanisms to compensate ranchers when their animals are killed by predators. Daly said that some ranchers aren't fans of how such compensation programs work in other states.
Okay, good, because they shouldn't get compensated for a natural act.
According to Daly, other states often won't pay out because wolf kills are difficult to confirm. When payments are made, according to Daly, they tend to undercompensate ranchers for the loss. Man, oh man, the sense of entitlement there. In this case, ranchers said the cow killed by the wolves was likely worth about $850 if she were sold, but her true value is much harder to calculate, since a fully grown cow might have multiple generations of offspring whose value could equate to tens of thousands of dollars.
So that, I mean, that's just gross in the terms of the speciesization and the basically enslavement of this cow and its progeny forever. It's also a completely terrible argument. You're out 850. You go get another cow if you want to, and it will then have endless young.
Exactly.
You know, it doesn't work. The math doesn't work the way they want it to work here.
Ranchers say that just by having a wolf pack close to their herds is bad for their bottom line. They say wolf packs stress out cattle, cause them to breed less frequently, and they lose valuable weight, i.e. the ranchers lose money. Since their return to rural Oregon and California, wolf cattle predation has become a major source of stress among the ranchers who graze their cattle in the rural forest and high desert. Wolf advocates and environmentalists fear for the wolves. And let's finish off this story over with to you, Danny.
Wolf advocates say they are troubled by recent wolf poaching cases in areas where cattle graze. Surprise, surprise. Last fall, a female gray wolf with ties to the Shasta Pack was found dead in a national forest near Summer Lake, Oregon. Federal wildlife officials and the Center for Biological Diversity have offered cash rewards for information leading to the killer. And earlier this month, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service offered a $5,000 reward for information of the death of another wolf, a male gray wolf, which was found shot to death in April northwest of Klamath Falls, Oregon, which is very close to the California border. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service said killing the gray wolf in this case was a violation of the Federal Endangered Species Act.
Right. So here we see ranchers as criminals. Right. I mean, they are looking out for their bottom line, and they are killing these wolves indiscriminately.
Well, or they certainly probably might be once we have more wolves to start with. But we know what happens to the coyotes that get hung up out in the rural areas around here on fences. And yeah, it'd be interesting to get to the next episode or another future episode if we go back into the history of this, because in a sense we're ranching, we have cattle in places where they should not be, right?
Essentially, yes, we have a natural ecosystem that can support big grazers and that normally would have big predators on
right.
it, but we no longer have them. We haven't had that since the 1920s, and so yeah, things are shifting. All right, well, thanks for finishing off that story, Danny. You're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM.
And now it's time for the Chico Animal Rights Calendar of Events. Get ready to mark your calendar, sharpen your pencils, dip your owl feathers into pots of ink.
All right, thanks, Danny. There are some great events coming up to put on your calendar, but first I just want to just quickly go through the foodie tip of the month. Some vegan Thanksgiving tips, right? I want to give you a few ways to just make your Thanksgiving dinner a little more vegan friendly. And I want you to consider 9 easy substitutions from our resident Chico vegan foodie, Toby Benedetto. You'll be heard her on this show a couple of times in the last year.
9? How exciting.
So 1, Miyoko's butter or Earth Balance butter instead of dairy butter. 2, vegetable broth instead of chicken or beef broth in gravy and in mashed potatoes. 3, you try looking for a product called Cocoa Whip instead of Cool Whip, which is has dairy in it. You can find that in the freezer section right there next to Cool Whip in regular supermarkets. 4, try making a mushroom gravy instead of turkey dripping gravy. 5, try looking for Dandy's marshmallows or Trader Joe's vegan marshmallows instead of gelatin-based ones to put on your sweet potatoes.
Those are really good. I'm sure people are buying these marshmallows all the time at Trader Joe's and have no idea they're vegan.
Absolutely. They're dead ringers, as they say. 6, mashed potato add-ins. Try using a neutral soy creamer, tofutti cream cheese, or tofutti sour cream, and there's a bunch of other brands out there that are right there in the supermarket, right next to the ones you usually grab. 7, did you know that Pillsbury Poppin' Fresh Dough original crescent rolls are vegan? Revisit that classic, and you know, you can smear a little Earth Balance margarine on it. Do you like sausage? 8, do you like sausage stuffing? Grab some Gimme Lean sausage in there instead, and I promise no one will know the difference.
You should fry it first, though.
Okay. And 9, consider pardoning a turkey for one of many other options, like a field roast celebration roast, which is wrapped in a a pastry crust, that's delicious, a tofurkey roast, a Gardein, or Trader Joe's turkeyless roasts. Trader Joe's has their turkeyless roasts in stock these days, so you can check that out. So, do your vegan guests a favor and make this roast for them for Thanksgiving. And for goodness sakes, please leave the butter and milk out of the mashed potatoes. Everybody wants to enjoy them. And I promise, olive oil and a little plant milk, and no one will even miss the butter and milk. All right. Let's get to the calendar, and then we'll get to the close. The main event that's going on in Chico is the Chico Vegan Thanksgiving Potluck on Sunday, November 19th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Chico Women's Club. Save the date. It's the 5th annual Chico Vegan Thanksgiving Potluck, and you can get tickets at chicovegan.com. This is a big annual bash for the Chico Vegan Group, where we enjoy the vegan Thanksgiving that we wish we could have had with our friends and family, but that we often can't, especially if you don't pay attention to those 9 tips I just gave you. So
it's a great event. I think, you know, it's like 50 to 100 or more people sometimes.
Yep.
Since it's a potluck, you get a huge variety of food to try, plenty of food to eat. It's great for kids. It's great for people trying to explore healthier eating, more humane eating, I should say.
Well, that's the main thing I wanted to promote for the calendar. If you have an event or other news to share, send an email to me at chicovegan@gmail.com and tell me all about it. And we have one last piece of business to take care of, and that's the animal rights quote of the week. Take it away, Danny.
Our quote of the week is from Thich Nhat Hanh from his famous 2007 Blue Cliff letter. As a spiritual family and a human family, we can all help avert climate change with the practice of mindful eating. Going vegetarian may be the most effective way to stop climate change. Being vegetarian is already enough to save the world.
Take that first step.
Non-Human Radio is made possible through the generous contributions of KZFR listeners like you. Many thanks to Guillermo Mash and Sue Hildebrand for their engineering assistance and moral support, and thanks to you, the listeners, who helped make the KZFR Pledge Drive a success. Stay tuned for Sue's show, The Real Issue, coming up next.
This has been Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM Chico. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, its volunteers, or its staff. We do, however, reflect the opinions of our non-human fellow earthlings who would rather not be killed and eaten, hunted, raised, experimented upon, or otherwise abused.
Our theme music is Ready to Fall by vegan activist Rockers Rise Against. If you missed any portion of this show or you want to listen again, go to the archives at kzfr.org and look for Non-Human Radio. This is Danny Toms and Jeannie Trezino signing off. Until next week, be different, be better, be kind.
And go vegan.
You are listening to FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, The Real Issue, and we'll be looking at in-home supportive services as well as Armistice Day.
While we're on the subject of hard work, I just want to say that I always was a man to work. I was born working and worked my way up by hard work. I ain't never got nowhere yet, but I got there by hard work. Work of the hardest kind. I've been down and I've been out. I've been disgusted and busted and I couldn't be trusted. I worked my way up and I worked my way down. I've been drunk and I've been sober and I've been baptized and got hijacked. I've been robbed for cash and I've been robbed on credit. Worked my way in jail and I worked my way out of jail. Woke up a lot of mornings, didn't know where I was at. The hardest work I ever done was when I was trying to get myself